Welcome to Terragrams. Terragrams has reached a critical impasse and is in aid of assistance. To continue, Terragrams must rely on contributions from listeners like you. Your support will assure that you, your colleagues, studio, faculty body, students, and classmates can continue to benefit from our growing and open archive, as well as all of our forthcoming conversations. All donations count. Please help. Visit our website at terragrams.com for more information. Today in Dispatch 30, we are joined by the Catalan landscape architect Martí Franch. Martí Franch is a Catalan landscape architect who has studied in Barcelona and Greenwich, England, and trained in the offices of Bureau Kiefer in Berlin and Bureau B&B in Amsterdam. Franch established his office, Estudi Martí Franch, EMF, in 1999 to independently pursue his interest in designing the landscape. Presently, EMF is composed of landscape architects, architects, and agricultural technical engineers, and works on projects spanning a wide range of scales, clients, and functions. Franch's garden project for the new museum, Can Framis, in Barcelona was a finalist for the 6th European Biennale of Landscape. Franch teaches in the master's program for landscape architecture in both the School of Architecture in Barcelona, as well as in the Autonomous University of Barcelona. In Dispatch 30, Franch talks about his garden project for the Can Framis Museum, his thoughts regarding professional practice in Spain, his preferred project from the finalists of the 6th Biennale, as well as his ideas regarding the conceptual process of design. Before beginning, I would like to thank the organizers of the 6th Biennale of European Landscape Architecture for their support and assistance in organizing the dispatches originating from their event. We begin our dispatch by talking about Franch's Biennale finalist project. Terragrams is very happy to welcome Martí Franch.
Martí, thank you for taking the time to join us at Terragrams, and welcome.
Thank you.
You've recently finished, or one of the projects that you've worked on has recently been constructed, the museum garden for Can Framis here in Barcelona. Could you tell us a little bit about the maintenance crew and their relationship to the project?
It's a project that has been controversial because it has been actually done in two phases. First phase finished spring 2010, and after 5 months there were a lot of wheat coming out of the plantations because of poor maintenance, and public service of parks decided to remove everything. So they actually came with machines and take over all the vegetation, all the ground level vegetation. So that means that after...
They just rototilled the entire...
Exactly. So the plantations that were made with ivy and bulbs, they were all gone. A lot of controversy came out of this because obviously we complained, and press was in there, and some political opposition on the municipality was in there. So finally the responsible of it, who were the Garden and Park Service in Barcelona, kind of recognized that this was not the way of doing. And they are now replanting it, so they start to redo the same project.
That year later.
Are
they
not even 1 year later. Say 8 months later, they are starting.
And will they be following the same plans?
That's what they told us. That's what we agreed, and they have started doing so. I hope that this keeps going up to the till the end. That the little details of the project about species and so, they all go through. So they don't only do the main job and let the little details off the project. But I think they will.
Did you know it was coming?
No. It was very strange because when we were building this project, there was a demand from the municipality to do a sunken deposit of water, because this part, well, this garden, it's between 1 meter and 1 meter and a half, below the ground, city's ground level. So when it's raining, it's very difficult to drain the water that came in there. So first we make a proposal that was accepted, but then halfway through the construction of the project, they said a deposit was going to be built.
And what was your first proposal?
We managed with very little, with very gentle slopes and pipes to drain the space. On top of that, the kind of plantations we did, they were plantations that they were keen with water. Mm-hmm. Ivy and poplar, they are species that they can, and also Quercus ilex, they can live quite well with water. So we managed. But then for high, extremely high precipitation rate, they thought it was not safe enough, so and they came out of the, with the need of making a deposit. The point was that this garden was privately funded, and the privates did not want to pay for the deposit because it was very expensive, very big and very expensive. So the point is that that took months of discussion between the parts to see who was going to pay for it. So the park, that it's a very small garden, had to be done in two parts. While we were finishing the second phase, one day I was going to just see how the works were going, and I find this 8-10 people absolutely taking everything off. So that was it. I mean, no notice, no. 1 week after being selected for Biennale Prize, we were in a kind of a cloud, very, very happy about that. And then I went there the week before the disaster happened, the destruction of the garden, and there were weeds that they were very, very high. And I was very offended about this situation, because while the building company was taking care of it, they in a way they keep it to a certain level, certain standard. And when it came to the public municipality who reception the first phase of the project, I think they a bit neglected. They they say that they didn't, but the fact was that the weeds, they were almost 1 meter high. And then the neighbors thought it was very neglected space, and then complained. Mm-hmm. And the reaction of the public park service was, the reaction to this complaint was, okay, let's remove it. And then they say maybe they would put grass on top of a place that was going to be ivy. So they just did it. I mean, no notice, not to us, but also to the district, to Barcelona, 22 Aroba. But then I think it looks like, and that's only my impression, that it was not very thought decision, and I don't know who really took this decision, but say that the people who the top managers of Parc des Jardins, when they knew what was going on, they changed a bit the attitude. But they just did it. I mean, nobody knew. And we just find these people rotovating it, so it's quite unbelievable.
Was the project reviewed by the Parks and Gardens before it was finally authorized?
Yes. That was a very, very tough process, because this garden actually wants to be a forest. It's not more than this, it just wants to be a forest, a poplar forest with a Quercus ilex inside. This is a very small and fragmented space, that the only way to give the atmosphere of a forest was to condense it, to really condense it, so planning a huge density, and a very, very high density. So what we did, we proposed to plant trees every 1.5 meter. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Actually, a bit like it was done in London in the Greenwich Park. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So we thought that was a good reference. And we did that, but in a more irregular shape. When we came to Parks and Garden Service in Barcelona about this idea, they say, oh no, it's impossible, you should plant trees every 7 or 8 meters to let them grow mature, and that's impossible, and it's not the way. And so after a very tough negotiation, we get it through 3.5 meters. So, but then we still did a last change that was, okay, we're going to plant the trees every 3.5 meters, but instead of planting one tree for the tripit, we're going to put 1, 2, or 3 trees per tripit. Mm-hmm. Then the effect really, and we did not plant the trees straight, but we turned them a little bit. So the effect was that actually we were planting in a very high density.
We got back to 1.5.
Yeah. The effect, yeah. So, but they accept that. And we had to change the plant 2 times. We wanted to plant platanus, because it's a very characteristic tree in Barcelona, and they asked us to change to another species that we could find. because of pest diseases in Barcelona and so. And we finally came out with Poporos Alba, that's also a very tall tree with a very clear shade, and we thought it was very interesting. And I have to say that I'm happy that we did, that we did change.
And in constructing this new urban forest, what kind of references did you use?
The idea of a forest, it comes from a landscape that I love. It's in Mollet, and also in my area around Girona. It's very typical to have platanus and poplar plantations. Normally they are done in a regular grid, but especially with platanus, in former times when they cut them, two or three trunks would come from the same tree. And you could really see this effect that we actually tried to reproduce in our project. So, but this is really a place that it's Gallecs in Mollet, 20 kilometers from Barcelona. Mm-hmm. We really like this reference. At the same time, I very much admire the work of Devine, mm-hmm. Dalnoki and Devine. And I don't think we have invented much more than this idea of creating space with relying especially on trees and spaces conformed by trees and the idea of succession. I think it's now very present in the landscape debate, so we just try to find the right species, one that would be very fast and create a very nice atmosphere initially, and then oak tree, Quercus ilex, that actually in Rome, that they are very big, Quercus ilex. I was very impressed, because here in Barcelona we do not have many examples of mm-hmm. really big old trees, but in Rome I saw them, so I thought, well, maybe we could combine these two species. That's maybe.
It seems as though the formal, spatial, and aesthetic qualities of this forest are dominant, and what seems a bit recessive is the forest as a living organism. Can you talk a little bit about how your ideas of this forest as a new biotope in the middle of the city, could you talk a little bit about the role that it plays in the urban landscape?
The whole idea of this project, it was not, honest, it was not thought like bringing nature into the city in terms of ecology, or not in terms of, say, ecology for animals, but ecology for other kind of animals, which are humans. It was very much about a need that I think we felt that in 22 Aroba, that is a neighborhood that once, it's a bit techno-exhibitionist, no? It's showing off lights and flashy things and stuff like this, but at the same time, it's like all Barcelona, it's a very dense district with a lot of, it's very hard space, in a city with a lot of sun, and we wanted to create a human habitat, you would say, no, that would completely be the opposite of this quality. So a place that yesterday we were talking with some friends. It's not to be a place for a lot of people. It's just to be a place for when you want to have a break and go there. So this habitat or this ecosystem. It's very permeable. You can smell the humidity. The leaf fell on the floor. I mean, nothing happens. So this is also about we did thinking about the man animal, but then it obviously works with animals. And I'm very glad to see that I won't tell you the name in English, but there's this very little bird that eats insects and stays all the time on a branch. Flies a little bit, gets a mosquito, and come back to the. And we have some inhabitants already, and butterflies, and so it was something not many, not about really making a huge contribution to the ecological debate, but at the same, I think when we think of ourselves of a bit being like animals, and I think we are a lot, and this converge into the same point.
Do you think that the lack of this discussion of new landscapes in Barcelona, the lack of ecology dropping in immediately into this discussion of new urban landscapes, especially new urban forests in this case, do you think that may be part of the problem or part of the hurdle that we need to get over as a profession here in Spain? Because it does, you know, clearly this densely planted forest is going to create a biotope that is going to attract new species to the urban, to this very densely populated urban neighborhood. And that could seem like an obvious point of departure for the project from the beginning, or a point of nourishment.
As I said, in Barcelona we have nature and landscape, no gardens, very close. You just have to take the metro, and in 15 minutes you are in Collserola, and that's a real natural landscape with high ecological value. It's my point of view that Barcelona needs landscapes or needs nature for people, and that's very important. I think what the Dutch, they sometimes say, nature for nature, nature for people. So I think that the need in Barcelona is for nature for people. So it's not the same kind of nature. It's a nature that it's ready to be used. And animals take advantage of that, that's very fine. But it's not, to me, the key issue in Barcelona. I think the key issue in Barcelona is about to create landscapes that they a bit work in contrast with the dominant heart spaces. It's a garden because it's a garden, but to me it's more a landscape what we did. We took a piece of forest somewhere next to a river, and we put it in the middle of town. And this, in a way, very simple approach, but this, I would say, especially the porosity and permeability of this project, it's something that it's very strange in Barcelona, and I think that's what people probably likes and probably needs. So in a way, you're right. I mean, Barcelona needs probably more spaces that they are a bit more porous and no. So
well, at least a dialogue about nature for people and animals.
I love animals. No problem about that.
There's a certain danger in creating natures. For nature, or for people, and creating this binary relationship between them. It's either one or the other.
When nature is not for one or the other.
It seems like a something that could really nourish a project like this, and it could take this project to another level. Mm-hmm. In Barcelona, the public space making has had a rich recent history from the 80s. After Franco's death and the new democratization of the country and of Catalonia, and the creation of a vast, enormous amount of public space in the 80s, then on to the creation of public space for the expo, which occupied and reconstructed the end of the Diagonal at the Forum. What were some of the positive attributes of the first wave of public spaces that were made in Barcelona by architects who had very little or no experience in making public space, and what were some of the problems that rose out of that?
I'm not an expert on that, because mostly I'm a practitioner, so I'm not sure I have an overall understanding on that, but I think it's very interesting when you ask somebody to think about a topic that it's not their own topic, because then what happens is that this person used his own tools to work on another kind of another job, say, and that's a bit what happened in Barcelona. You had all these architects that for 40 years or more they were designing in housing and in interior design, so where people very keen on materials, on detailing, on making a difference with little detailing, and then these people with the strategy of Barcelona strategy and Oriol Buigas of kind of changing the dynamics of each quarter or district by adding a number of public spaces, say plazas, say parks, these people were confronted with scales that they were uncommon to them. And they were obviously people with a lot of energy and a lot of some of them with a lot of talent, and they start making landscape architecture, whereas when I see a tradition of other countries with a longer understanding on landscape, they had, I would say, their tradition was a bit more static. They didn't move for a long time. No, you can look at the, for instance, the very interesting British tradition, but did not evolve for many years. It was stayed in the same of similar formula. And then these young people from Barcelona, who did not know much about how to do it, they completely changed the vocabulary and the way of doing. And I think that was what actually was breaking through. In a very few time, a lot of spaces were done. It was kind of a nursery of experiments. And some of these projects, they were good, some not. And some of them, or many of them, have not aged nicely. That's the point. That's true. But then I think the whole profession over Europe, and I don't know if over the world maybe, they say, oh, what strange things they are doing there, no? So it's true, because and that's something that captivates me now about other emerging new world cultures. I mean, like, I think in a way Australia is happening something similar at the moment. I'm seeing projects coming, being published from Australia that they, wow, using what's going on down there, no? It looks like they are trying new ways of doing. So, yeah, say that the first part of the 80s, it was about making squares and making always a sculpture related to each square. With this sculpture, they would like to people of the neighborhood recognize a new identity. Like, democracy, it's not the same like dictatorship, and this is a place you don't have to hide because nobody is spying you or wants to control your way of thinking. You can go out in the street, you can take it, it's yours, so let's make plazas and let's celebrate that. But obviously there were people that their way of thinking was about buildings and about hard materials, and they had none or very little confidence working with other materials than those of architecture. So they play with it. And I think they are very interesting cases, like Parc del Clot, that's still going on, and it's quite a nice park. I mean, it's
perhaps
one of...
Perhaps nicer now than it was
built. Yes. I think we have to think that even the three nurseries in Spain, they were very young at that moment. You could not go and get many species. There were very few of them. They were not very nicely cultivated. So we were completely undeveloped on that topic. And I think with the time, and then I think the important role of the Master of Architecture, of Landscape Architecture in Barcelona, these very young and talented people, they actually kind of, I think, of met there and start to think about other ways of doing, and they were very active inviting as well, I think, especially the French, Correjou and others, and there was a lot of admiration of Northern European countries. So little by little, they learn by working, not in the school or from the tradition, but just by working. I think there are very nice places from the first period, but not very nice parks. Mm-hmm. And I think with this, how you say that in English, trial and error, the way they were getting better, and the university was improving, and we had having more influence. People were interested about Barcelona, and they were showing as well their way of doing, and more hybrid projects came. And for instance, I would say one of the nicest projects from this early period for me is Parc de las Dunas, of Manolo Ruiz Sánchez, that it's a very nice project. And I think it's a genuine landscape project done by an architect that has a very clear mind, and that has not been very well kept. And that's not a fail of the project. I mean, I would completely disagree if somebody says, oh, it's because it was done by... No. It's because the public service in Barcelona, sometimes they don't do their job as they should. Mm-hmm. Because I just came from Paris, and come on, Parc Citroën, it's extra difficult to be kept, and they do it. Mm-hmm. And here we have sometimes just some gramines, Iparrenia Irte, And it seems impossible to keep them working. I say, come on. I mean, it's sometimes some of our projects were done from a very architectural point of view, and they were, and say that the soft part was not very well thought. But sometimes it's that we also not have a good tradition in maintaining things, mm-hmm. and that also needs to be learned. So when I think about Holland or England or France, they have a much wider experience of keeping with open spaces and a much better tradition in maintenance. So some of the fails that we had down here were as well, not only for the project, or a combination of radical ideas that were not very ground-based and not very well-kept spaces at the same time.
Do you think this was the problem with your project at the museum?
The project in our museum, it was a bit complex as well, because it's about maintenance, and a real problem is that we said we would put a sea of ivy, and what happened is that it was a sea of ivy with a lot of batweeds. So, and that also has to do with construction, but that sometimes it's very difficult because we did a project that was to finally be given to the municipality, but was paid by a private investor. And then there is always this battle about prices and standards, and again, there's no a lot of tradition in our country about understanding the landscape. So private investors understand very good when you talk about a brick wall or an asphalt path or whatever, but when you talk about the need of very good quality soils with no seeds, with and that cost three times more than standard soil, and there's no culture to understand that this is important. So when it comes to the point of making things more economic, sometimes the criteria are not very well thought. And that's also a bit about our lack of tradition with building and maintaining public space. Obviously, I think maintenance was not clever, and the attitude was absolutely arrogant, and that's no discussion on that. But on the contrary, as we have the one that built the project, there were some mistakes. There were far too many weeds, and this is not correct at the same time.
You're listening to Terragrams, and our guest is the young Catalan landscape architect, Martí Franch.
The profession of landscape architecture is thriving in Northern Europe, France, Germany, Switzerland, England, Scandinavia. Would you say that the profession of landscape architecture is thriving in Spain?
First, I have a very little understanding generally in Spain because quite a local person.
Right. Let's say Catalonia.
Yeah, Catalonia. I feel more comfortable not only because of my identity, but as well because I sincerely I've been not traveling that much. And I don't know if what I say about here applies to Spain. That is a very diverse country. I would say I think applies probably to the big cities in Spain, but not to everywhere. I think we are not leading nothing anymore. I mean, at that moment, at one moment, it seems that you had to go to Barcelona to see, you know, what was going on there. No, everybody who would love this profession would find the excuse to go to Barcelona for a short period. No, and it's not that the people were overwhelmed, but you had to go and you had to discuss and see. No, I'm agree or I don't agree. So it was generating debate, Barcelona. I think, I hope it's not too arrogant, that this discussion, not exactly what was built here, but the discussion that generate also have changed the way of doing of other countries. So you when I go to Lyon, that's a city I love, they say they are very much inspired in Barcelona. And I think that now they're doing things much in a much interesting way, that a better way than we are doing. And also in Holland, landscape being seen like green trees path, I mean, has developed. And I think one of the contributions to that was the Barcelona strange way of doing. I don't think that now Barcelona is leading nothing at the moment. I'm not saying that what's going on here, it's bad. Probably it's better than, I'm sure it's better than what was being done before. But there's two things that have changed. First, we are not that brave. I'm not. Especially our political leaders, they don't want to take much risk, and they were willing, they were asking for risk, for instance, in the Olympic Games. They would help you to any strong idea, and Manolo, I think you will talk with him maybe, he explained that very well, and I think, because he lived it and I was not there yet. So they had political support to take risks to make experiments. At the moment, it's just the opposite. When building comes from it, we want to make this extra long bench, and we had to change a number of things because the only one kind of profile of wood, because it's the one they have in their storage maintenance rooms. So they don't want to take much risk. And I know maintenance is very important, so you have to keep to certain standards, and we did, and it's okay. But it's at the moment, it's just the opposite. There's no, I think, in most of our cities, it's about risk, zero risk standards, things that can be very automatically maintained, not with talent, not with experimentation, just with standard, and exactly the feedback you get now from the Gardens and Park Service in Barcelona, it's very disappointing, is standard. And if you keep to that, all spaces look the same, and they are done with very similar materials, with very similar trees, in a very similar density. So I don't think now it's very easy in Barcelona to be experimental. And I think that this attitude is now happening in the Netherlands, that it's actually their own country tradition to innovate. And in Lyon and other places, I think in Denmark as well, it looks very much, and probably in Australia, I think they are now taking more risks than we are. And this is not about the professionals only, but also the general country atmosphere.
And how are the professionals of landscape, how are landscape architects perceived in Catalonia? Are they getting access to interesting projects like this Garden of the Museum?
We don't exist. The landscape architecture profession doesn't exist here. We don't have a professional body that defends our... we do have Asociación Española, Spanish Association of Landscape Architects, but it's... And I am a member, but it's an association that has no legal status, just like a community of people working on the topics in a very different way. But so we don't have legal status, and we never have competitions. I mean, I've never been invited to a competition that says, we need landscape architects here. We don't have these competitions. There was the Valdebebas Park in Madrid. It was an interesting competition that said, can be landscape architects, they can be architects, or they can be engineers. But it's there's never, ever one competition, we want a landscape architect, because we don't exist here. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that there are not people working, that they are doing landscape architecture. I think in this country there are very talented architects, that they are doing very interesting landscape architecture. So if we would think from the profession point of view, what's called landscape architecture doesn't exist, but I think there is a... It's not so much about what you have been studying when you were 18 to 22 or to 25. It's about how you have developed in life. And I think there are very good colleagues that they were first trained like architects, and they may have or not doing a master in landscape architecture, and they are doing nice work. Mm-hmm. Problem here is that the ones that they are not architects, they are, I don't know, people would say that in sons of a minor god. We are always second class. The ones that have not been through architecture, we are always second class. We don't have competition, so it's very difficult to get through. It's very tough. That's the point. Even though, like myself, I cannot complain because the colleagues, architects, they have always support me, and I think they support as well other people. But at the end, we don't have a professional body, and we don't. We are never invited to a competition, so it's complicated.
Very complicated.
Very complicated.
What drives your design process? Do you feel a responsibility, or do you hold a responsibility or a burden to innovate?
It's not very conscient. I've never rationalized the way of we make projects. But there's inherent attitude that I think that this I learned from my colleagues in Barcelona. It's on this project, what can we do? Well, where it's almost ecological term of niche, no? The ecological niche. What's the ecological niche in this project?
The niche.
What's ecological niche? What are the arguments we can find that can push this project, and that's something that it may be a conscious special thing, or it can be about materials or the way to make people occupy the space. But I have to say, I don't think about my way of producing. But after a while, when I see what we have drawn and built, I see that my projects are quite different one to each other. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, this kind of identity of this place, it's very important to me. And the ingredients of the site, what if we will be talking about cooking, mm-hmm. not to decide whether it's fish or meat or it's vegetarian, and the main ingredients, no, beef or goat, and then also the secondary, no, like some herbs. So I'm gonna rosmarinos. So taking time to see what the inherent qualities of the site. It's really something that interests me.
How do you recognize a good idea in this process?
I don't know. I don't know. It just sometimes there's something when you are doing something that it you feel excited about. It's quite intuitive. We have not rationalized that very much, but there's something that immediately you feel, wow, that can work. may not, but that can work. It's interesting, and I don't know. And sometimes that's very funny that the first ideas, they come even before we go to the site, with the little knowledge you have on, because we have keep quite local. So whatever, we have a project in one place, we already know a little bit about the place, mm-hmm. and we imagine a bit about. So sometimes just by looking photos, we have already first a couple of questions about the site that we, obviously when we go there, we check it out. And the other thing that for me is very important, I like very much being a landscape architect. I love profession. I love traveling, and I go to see lots of projects, as much as I can afford to see. So I try to travel a lot and see a lot of projects. So I also I think I have a kind of a library of projects in my brain. So I can to look of what I would say the opportunities of the site with a certain background of other projects that I've seen and visit, mm-hmm. and try to find ways to solve things with that.
You've had your office for 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. What kind of collaborators have you tried to surround yourself with? And have you found the right mix?
Yeah. As I said, being a landscape architect, university landscape here, it's not easy. So I've been now freelance for 10 years in a very different conditions. Start working in a 35 square meter flat that was as well my home, so it's not that starting an office here is a very challenging thing. So, but I have to say, since I am my background is initially like an horticulturalist. Then went London to study landscape architecture. I have an understanding of the living material, and I trust on that. And then most of the people that help me in the office, they are always architects that have been through a master of landscape architecture. They people that they have decided that they have knowledge on architecture, but the thing that really motivates them is the open space, the mm-hmm. design of landscape. So I think that's interesting. The leading in a way position, it's of somebody that it's very concerned about the living materials and the opportunities that they have, but surrounded with other people that they have a little bit different conditions. So my office is very much, I have to say, I've always have more architects than landscape architects in my office.
And how does your studio work as a business?
As a business?
Is it successful? Can you make good business at the same time making landscapes?
Yeah, well, it's good enough. To be true, I don't think very much of myself like a businessman. that's not my strongest point to a certain point of view. I feel more like an artisan than like a businessman. So sometimes it's very difficult. It's very difficult. First, because I'm not trained like a businessman. No? And when we study landscape architecture, that's not a thing that they develop very much. And some at that time when you're a student, it's not interesting, but then later on maybe it would be very useful. And it's very difficult to become a professional businessman where the country where you are working, your profession doesn't exist. So that's an extra difficulty. So it's difficult, but I don't think we are doing that bad. Even though we are a bit of an artisans, we are not doing that bad. And we managed to make collaborations in south of France, and I hope with Biennale it gets better.
In the past 10 years running your office, but even before that, with your experience at Bureau B&B in Holland and Studio Kiefer in Berlin, how have you matured as a professional?
I have to say that both experiences were very strong. I first spent 3 months in Gaffi Kiefer, so it was a very short but very intensive summertime, but it was very interesting, and sometimes I get much more learning about being in Gaffi Kiefer and then 1 year in B&B that the time I spend in the university in England. I mean, when you have the opportunity to be in such interesting offices, you see very, very powerful ways of working. So from that time, I think I learned a very strong compromise with project. It's not about arranging things, it's about making a project. It's not about solving problems, it's about generating an idea, special idea, and get it through. But since I was a student when I was in this office, I just stayed at the very first stages of the project. When I came back to Catalonia, and after fighting and fighting, we get to build the first project. And that's where I very much learned here, is that that in the process of making building a project, there are almost three languages. It's the language you use yourself and with the office and your colleagues to think about how to transform a space and to make a project. Then there's the language you have to learn with your clients, and that's a very different language. And then it's a very funny one, or not funny, but very tricky one. The one you have to talk with the constructors. Sometimes think about this film, Lost in Translation, that when they are taking pictures of I don't remember the name of the actor, the photographer talks for 2 minutes, and when they translate it to him, say, smile, no? And when you build a project sometimes it's like this, you have been thinking for months in one concept and the perspective, and then you go to the work and they say, concrete, right, up, more. And that's what I've been learning here as well. And I have to say, to be honest, I mean, I studied in England, but before I did my first studies here in Barcelona, and that very first steps, they were next to teachers like Ana Zaonero, Jordi Bellmunt, Roig. So people that even I spent very, very few time at the university with them, they were very powerful people to me, and very, very people that they when I would come back from England, they would receive me in their office, give me support, give their opinions on my project. So I also think that even though I've not been formed like a landscape architect here in Barcelona, I've very much influenced in this, like things typically from Barcelona. If you make a project, you have to detail from the curb, you have to design your dustbin, the furniture, you have to try to design everything. Don't buy anything, just do it yourself. and that's very much, but I was also influenced by this. And well, at the end, you make a mix of everything.
Final question. Could you give us some thoughts about the Biennale and the projects that you saw presented yesterday?
Yes. Of Biennale, generally, I was coordinator of the first edition of Biennale. And it's something that's very close to my heart because it's my first job. When I came back from England, it was work for Biennale, so it's I feel very close to this event, and I cannot be critical, and it's too close to me. But it's incredible that the country that have no tradition in anything about landscape 25 years ago and 12 years ago, now it's one of the world epicenters of discussion on landscape in a very singular format. But it's amazing that every second year we get some of the best professionals here to talk in Barcelona. And that's a huge opportunity that we are very glad that keeps going. That's one point. And about this edition of Biennale and the projects we saw yesterday, I find very interesting in many terms. First, I thought that the proposal coming in, they were so different. And they were talking about different topics in different scales and different cultures, that just to have a general overview of all of them was very interesting. It also was very interesting the way they were presented, because some project was presented quite in a poetic way about feelings, and other ones were more functional or urbanistic, and other ones were talking almost like a management approach. So it also was very interesting to hear how people would explain their stories. And then I have to say I have a favorite. I like very much the project of the Tel Aviv team, mm-hmm. because of its clearness and very simple, not simple in bad way, but just concise, very powerful idea, and that was it. Bam, wood, painting, asphalt, and people taking over. And I like this very basic thing, because in a way there was a part of this project that I would like maybe a bit more exploring about what happened beneath the wood and maybe with the sun, and maybe to play a little bit with that. But I think landscapes are very simple most of the time. When you think about a forest, it's a tree million times, or three types of tree million times. When you think about a crop, it's wheat with a border. So at the end, landscapes are quite, you can have huge areas of land built in a very simple way. And I think that this project had this power. In a different way, our project also the same. It's just piece of forest, and I like these projects that they are quite distilled, very much the concept.
I agree with you, although at the same time I wonder if there's a risk to distilling our landscapes to, or our forests to only three types of trees. We found that when agricultural land gets big and the crops become singular, that we run into really big problems. Mm. Also, when our forests lose their biodiversity. And I think one of the risks of projects like that is that although they're clearly doing a lot for public space and public space making in Tel Aviv, in a city that doesn't have a tradition of public space, I wonder if they shouldn't be doing more. And if we shouldn't ask more if we shouldn't be asking more from our projects, especially the projects that are in the landscape that need to deal with sort of really critical environmental issues at the same time with dealing with the typical socio-cultural issues.
If we take this project, that I think it's already interesting because we are debating on that. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, there are projects that it's a nice other project, but this project it's a project that, because it's very powerful in essence, gives opens debate, and I think that's already interesting. To me, if we think about Barcelona, and make a parallelism with the project yesterday, it's Barcelona, it's a grid. And if you hear our urban planners in Barcelona, they are so proud about this grid. But the grid of Barcelona, it's boring in a way. I think it's boring. Only the grid in Barcelona, it's boring. It's always the same. So the grid, it's a system that works very nice, but it needs the exceptions, I would say. Mm-hmm. You need the diagonal, and you need the Gothic quarter, that works in a very different scale and a very different way. And you need Collserola behind. And you need a number of things that they have, environmental and other apportations to this grid, that makes the grid nice, because only the grid can be very asphyxiating. Asphyxiating, yeah. If we go back to the project yesterday, I think they did the grid and very little exceptions. Mm-hmm. So probably what would be nice to see about the project would be, for instance, the way the water touches the wooden pontoons. How, like I said, there's a lot of sand, a lot of porosity underneath, so maybe it would be nice to explore this, but I don't know much about this project. But projects can undergo maturity in a different way. So I think in a rough situation, like I understood there was this one, it was important to make the grid, and it would be nice to have the time, the opportunity to make the exceptions. Mm-hmm. And I agree that it's not about, for instance, only about three trees, of course, there's three layers, mm-hmm. that grow and everything. But I also think that when we make a project, we have to take a very strong initial point. And then it's important, I agree with you, to take time to make the variations on this mm-hmm. important.
Any last ideas or any last, anything do you have any preoccupations you'd like to share with us?
Well, I enjoyed very much this talk, I would say. And having opportunity to talk about landscape and to share that in a web that many people can access. And I have a lot of preoccupations, but I wouldn't know.
Wouldn't know where to begin.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Well, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Very nice. Great.
You are listening to Terragrams, and our guest is young Catalan landscape architect Martí Franch. Thank you for joining us for the 30th dispatch of Terragrams. Terragrams must rely exclusively on contributions from listeners like you. Your support will assure that you, your colleagues, studio, faculty body, students, and classmates can continue to benefit from our growing and open archive, as well as all of our forthcoming discussions. If you have enjoyed the Terragrams initiative and are looking forward to our upcoming dispatches, go to our homepage at terragrams.com and select Donate. This will lead you to the PayPal site for an online contribution. Otherwise, please contact me directly at info@terragrams.com for alternate forms or methods of support. All donations count. Please help. To find out more about Terragrams and sign up for our next deliveries, please visit our website at www.terragrams.com or subscribe to us using iTunes. Thank you to all the organizers of the 6th Biennale of European Landscape Architecture for their support and assistance in organizing the dispatches originating from their event. Special thanks to the books for their wonderful and very cool music. You can expose yourself more to the books at www.thebooksmusic.com. Join us soon for a conversation with Tel Aviv architects Gani Meslitz-Kassif and Judy Kassif, Barcelona's 6th Biennale of European Landscape Architecture, Rosa Barba Prize recipients. This concludes our 30th dispatch of Terragrams. Thank you for listening. I love you.
rainbow. All the music is a rainbow.